Parshas Lech Lecha, we take the step from the world at large to the beginnings of the Jewish people. And of course, Lech Lecha begins with Lech Lecha, Avram's directive from HaKadosh Baruch Hu to leave, to go from where he is, Haran, to Eretz Canaan. Vayomer Hashem al Avram, Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Aleph, Lech Lecha Me'artzecha, Me'moladcha B'Savicha. He's got to leave all that behind. El Ha'aretz Asher Arek. There is a very interesting and a beautiful comment of the Medrash, Bereishis Rabbah, accompanying the subtext of Lech Lecha. Go to that land, says the Medrash, Lech v'ha'er lefanai b'chol ha'olam. Go and illuminate before me throughout the entire world. And on a simple level, of course there's many levels that the Medrash can be understood, but Avram comes into his own in Eretz Canaan. There's a certain amount of success he's been having in Haran, after all. We have Anefesh Asher Asu b'Haran. He has the following, he has disciples, but he really comes into his own and shines fully in Eretz Canaan. And therefore, with Lech Lecha comes Lech v'ha'er lefanai. And in fact, to put it back into the words of Lech Lecha, as many Mefarshim say, although the extra word Lecha, it's difficult. Lech Lecha, we would translate, go for yourself. It's almost, you could leave it untranslated. Al pi pshuto. Rashi comments, of course. But many Mefarshim say, Lech Lecha means literally, go towards yourself. Lecha, Lecha means to you. So Avram is being told to go to Avram. Go to yourself. And what that means is, go to a place where you can be fully yourself, where you can fully realize who you are. So as Avram goes to Eretz Canaan, he finds the land of Canaan, he also finds Avram. But there is a further dimension to be discerned within this comment of the Medrash, and it's discussed in the Sefer Or Gedaliyahu or Rav Gedaliah Shor. He begins by referring us to a comment of the Medrash elsewhere, earlier in Parshas Bereishis. The Pasuk reads in Perek Hei, Pasuk Aleph, Eile toldos hashamayim v'ha'aretz behi bar'am. These are the generations or the happenings of the heavens and earth, behi bar'am, when they were created. And the Medrash there makes a rather enigmatic comment. Says Medrash, Al tikri behi baram, ela be'avraham. If you look at the word behi baram, it actually contains the same letters as be'avraham. And therefore, the Medrash says, read not behi baram, read Avraham. Of course, whenever Chazal tell us, Al tikri this way, ela that way, we need to wonder why. Specifically, as on the face of it, it sounds like the Pasuk says Behi Bar'am, and the Medrash says, don't read it the right way, just read it this other way. But why? Maybe we should just be happy to read it the way it's actually written. Presumably it's written that way for a reason. What then is the meaning of this Medrash? Al tikri Behi Bar'am, Ela ba'Avraham, Ein ha-medrash hazeh elmer, Ela darsheni. And the Or Gedaliyahu explains that there's a foundational principle that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world, he created it incomplete. In a sense, part of man's job is to bring creation to its completion. In fact, some Mefarshim say, al derech hapshat, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Vayomer Elokim na'aseh Adam, Hashem says, let us make man. And of course, if Hashem is talking, so why is it in the plural? Rashi, of course, comments, he's talking to the Malachim, he's consulting them. Some Mefarshim say, Sefer Ikrim, that he's actually addressing man. Because the full formation of man will come between Hashem and man. Hashem says to man, Naase Adam, between us we'll make man. I'll do most of it, and you finish. And in fact, this is the basis of the historic exchange between Turnus Rufus and Rabbi Akiva. Turnus Rufus asked, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commands Am Yisrael to do the mitzvah of Milah? It sounds like they're almost insulting the human being as HaKadosh Baruch Hu created him. Hashem made him shalem, so to speak, and you're taking something away. Ma'ase yodav shalmi gadolim. Whose handiwork is greater? Shall HaKadosh Baruch Hu or shall Basav Adam? Hashem gave you a finished product and you start tampering with it. So Rabbi Akiva asked a simple question. When wheat comes out of the ground, how do we consume it? We grind it up, we water, put it in the oven. That's a lot of tampering. Why not just have it as nature intended? What are you saying? Whose deeds are greater? Baruch Hu, who gave you the wheat, or Adam, who turned it into bread? But of course, Turnus Rufus also ate bread and did not eat wheat kernels. What Rabbi Akiva meant to indicate through that moshel is that as surely as it's true for food, it's true for everything. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives you the raw materials and then Naase Adam, and then you need to complete it and to perfect it. The first person in our experience to embark on this process of creation perfecting itself is Avram Avinu. Avram is the one who takes this journey towards beginning with human existence and elevating it. This really is a response to the fact that the Pasuk describes the world as Behi Bar'am. That itself says Darshani. If you translate the word Behi Bar'am literally, it sounds like they were created. It doesn't say by whom. Why would the Pasuk not say, Eile told us, Shashemayim Va'aretz, Shashem Bar'am? That Hashem, why not identify Hashem as the creator? Behi Bar'am also almost makes it sound as if they create themselves. It's at the very least a passive. And that's why the Medrash is saying that in fact the pshat of Behi Bar'am means the final stages of creation need to come from creation itself. It is an internal process. Behi Bar'am. And that's why the Medrash says, Al tikri Behi Bar'am, ela ba'Avraham. Meaning, if you wish to get a further insight into the Pasuk, the way it is written, Behi Bar'am, it's almost self-generated, the final aspect of creation, final stages, read ba'Avraham. Because Avraham is the person who embodies that process of the culmination of creation coming from creation itself. So Avraham, the person, is Behi Bar'am, the process. And thus we emerge with a fascinating vision, whereby the life of Avram corresponds to the finishing up of the creation of the world. And this gives us further insight now into the central experiences in the lives of Adam, of Avram Avinu. Avram Avinu was commanded with 10 nisyonos, as we know, Asara nisyonos nisnasa Avram Avinu. That's from the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. The prior Mishnah has already told us, Ba'asor ma'amoros nivra ha'olam. The world was created with 10 utterances. And then tells us that Avram Avinu passed 10 nisyonos. Now, Mefarshim ponder, beginning with Rishonim, what is the concept of a nisoyon, a test or a trial? When Hashem tests a person, what does that mean? Of course, the launch of the discussion is that it can't mean what it normally means. Whenever you test something, it's in order to find out what it is capable of. HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows full well what a person is capable of. It can't be a nisayon in that respect. Rather, says the Ramban in Parshas Vayera, the idea of a nisayon is not for Hashem to find out, but rather it's for the person, for the subject, in order to bring out what exists, capabilities and capacities that exist within him potentially, to actualize them, to bring them into the world of reality. Because, says Ramban, HaKadosh Baruch Hashem chafetz l'man tzidko, Hashem wishes to, people are here in order to merit sachar. Says Ramban, sachar comes for a ma'aseh tov, not for a lev tov. A person cannot expect to have sachar for all the things that they would do, or that they would be capable of doing. A person gets sachar for all the things that they do, and therefore HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings upon the person circumstances that will draw out from him all the things that he's capable of, from potential into actuality. That's in Nisoyon. Lahavdil, it's interesting to know where this is rooted. The word Nisayon has two meanings. Nisoyon, we say, means a test, but Nisoyon also means experience. You ever see a firm, they publicize, they have Esrim Shana Nisayon. It doesn't mean they've been undergoing trials and tribulations for the last 20 years. Maybe they have. But Esrim Shana Nisayon means 20 years experience. And it's fascinating to consider that Nisayon as experience is exactly Nisayon as a test, according to the Ramban. The goal of the test is in order for the quality of the tzaddik to be experienced in actuality. And therefore, the idea of a nisayon brings into the world what otherwise was only there in a latent sense. And this further corroborates our understanding that Avraham Avinu, in terms of his existence, is bringing into the world certain kochos that were originally created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Avraham is using them and developing them. And this gives us a fascinating correspondence between the 10 ma'amoros shebahem nivra ha'olam and the asara nisyonos shebahem nisnasa Avraham Avinu. With the original 10 ma'amoros, HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the raw materials of the world, and through the 10 nisyonos, Avraham Avinu further created himself as he brought potential into actuality. So much so that Mefarshim point out parallels between the Nisyonos of Avram and the Ma'amoros, Shebehem Nivra Ha'olam. And we'll suffice it with two, but the first of the Nisyonos, although there's actually quite a discussion in the literature as to how to rate and reckon the 10 Nisyonos of Avram Avinu, but the consensus of Mefarshim is that the first of the Nisyonos is actually not mentioned in the Torah, which is a discussion in itself. It's the Nisoyon of Or Kasdim, where the test is how firmly does Avram believe in what he stands for? Is he prepared to stake his life on it? And he was. That was the first Nisoyon. The Nisoyon of Or Kasdim is Avram being prepared to forfeit his existence for the truth. And the miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu performed for him was to give him his existence. Naturally, he should have died there in Or Kasdim. But he didn't. He was given new existence because he was prepared to give up his entire existence for the sake of Hashem, and thus his existence was brought back in a heightened fashion. The first of the utterances with which the world is created was bringing the world into existence. The Gemara says in Maseches Rosh Hashanah, Bereishis is the first of the Ma'amoros. There's only 9 Vayomers. The first of the Ma'amoros is Bereishis. Bereishis Nami Ma'amar Hava. And Bereishis bara elokim hashamayim es haaretz, and therefore the recreation, the re-existence through the preparedness for nullification of existence of Avram, his test number one, corresponds to Ma'amar number one of Bereishis bara elokim. And this brings us now to the second Nisoyon. For the second Ma'amar in the creation of the world is Yehi Or. Hashem says there should exist light. And of course, light can mean many things. On the most basic level, it's the physical light with which we see. But on a higher level, light is to enlighten, to give people an insight as to how life should be lived. And the second Nisoyan of Avram is Lech Lecha. And therefore, we understand on a deeper nuance, the Medrash says on the words Lech Lecha, Lech Vehaer Lefanai Bechol Ha'olah. Lech Lecha means, this is your second Nisoyan, this is the second element of the higher levels of creation, Behi Bar'am, the second Ma'amar was Yehi Or, so now this is your Yehi Or, Lech Lecha, where you will illuminate. So it's a fascinating, really, introduction and insight into the life of Avram, and especially this concept of the parallels between the Asar Ma'amaros and the Asar Nisyonos, and all that they represent. With Lech Lecha, Avram is given promises. So much so that many Mefarshim wonder, where is the Nisayon in Lech Lecha? After all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, nothing's working out for you here. Everything will work out for you over there. Are you prepared to go? Who wouldn't go? It almost seems to take the Nisayon out of it. If everything was working out well for him here, and that he's going into the unknown, so then that's Lech Lecha, who knows? Hashem says, you don't have children, etc., etc. Go there, your every wish will come true. And Avram says, I'll go. And it's an outstanding success. That's Ad Kedei Kach, that's the question in the wake of these assurances. But what are the assurances? Pasuk Beis, Ve'esechol Goy Gadol, I'll make you into a great nation. Va'varechecha, I'll bless you. Va'agad l'shemecha, I'll make your name great. Ve'heyei Baracha. Now, interestingly, Rashi explains this pasuk in two waves. The first, kipshuto, and the second, kimidrosha. Kipshuto, Rashi sets about explaining what's ve'esachal goy gadol, what does that mean, what's va'varechecha, and Rashi explains, ve'esachal goy gadol means there you'll have children. And v'agad l'shemecha, you'll become well known. V'avarechecha, I'll bless you, says Rashi, b'mama, with material assets. So, there is a simple definition or term for each of these brachas. Reputation, children, wealth. And then, Rashi seems to shift into a different mode entirely. Rashi says, Dover Acher. You know what the meaning of these three expressions is? Vesecholagoy Gadol, Vavarechecha Vagal Shemecha. It means the following. Vesecholagoy Gadol, I'll make you into a great nation. Zeshe Omrim Elokei Avram. That translates into the fact that we say to Hashem, He is Elokei Avram. Vavarechecha, the second term. Zeshe Omrim Elokei Yitzchak. The third term, Vagad l'shemecha, Zeshe Omrim, Elokei Yaakov. And then, what about the final phrase? I mean, there's only three avos, but it does say Veheyei Bracha. So Rashi says, Yochel Yuchosmin Bekulam. I might think that as surely as we mention all of the avos by name in the first bracha of Shemona Asrei, which we do, Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov, so I might think that when we conclude the bracha, we'll also say, Baruch Atah Hashem, Magen, Avram, Yitzchak, V'Yaakov. Why not? I mean, there were three in the middle. Should be three at the end? No. Talmud Loma Vehye Bracha. You will be the bracha. Bracha Chos Min V'lo Bahem. The conclusion of the bracha is only Avram. Magen Avram. So, these words of Rashi are very striking for two reasons. Number one, what did Rashi see in the Pshat approach to the Pasuk that was not enough? As we know, whenever Rashi brings more than one Perush, there's something about the first Perush that's not, doesn't fully satisfy Rashi. As if he moves on. What's wrong with the first Perush? It sounds perfect. Every word has its niche, fame, wealth, children. It's all accounted for. And number two, even when Rashi sees fit to bring a second Perush, but what a Perush! I mean, we should remember that we're talking about a pasuk in the Torah. This Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, it seems to be have completely lifted off and have nothing to do with the pasuk at all. It almost sounds like we're dealing with symbols. 1, 2, 3, 4 is Avram, Yitzhak, Yaakov, and back to Avram. We almost seem to be ignoring the words. They could say anything. So one of the great Mefarshei Rashi, the Ber Yitzchak, explains that actually what Rashi's bothered by is the conclusion of the pasuk. In other words, as long as you're saying Vesachala Goy Gadol, that's got a pshat meaning, Va'avarechacha, whatever that means, Va'agad L'Shemecha, but then the final phrase really needs to be reckoned with. Ve'heyeh bracha. You will be blessing. What does that mean? It sounds like a reiteration of the second bracha, Va'avarechacha. And moreover, we may add that even if it's somehow further nuance, but wouldn't it be appropriate to put it next to Va'avarechacha? I mean, that's min b'mino. To say Va'avarechacha, Ve'heyeh bracha, is much, each one has its own nuance, but it's left till the end. And it's very difficult to understand what it means. What is contained within Ve'heyeh bracha that wasn't within the original Va'avarechacha? Now, it is true that Rashi does relate to this. Rashi says Ve'heyeh bracha, he gives a pshat rendition. Habrochos nesunos biyodcha. Ve'heyeh bracha doesn't mean that you will be blessed, but actually you will now be able to bless others. Ad achshav haya biyodi. The blessings thus far were in my hand, says Hashem. Beirachti the Adam v'Noach. I blessed Adam v'Noach. Umi achshav atot tevarech es asher tachvot. But now you can bless whoever you want. That's Rashi's pshat offering for heyeh bracha. So it's quite different than you being blessed. You can actually bless others. It's still, bracha is a noun. Rashi explains that it means Avram will be blessing others. There's still something, in a sense, dots that need to be joined. It doesn't say ve'heyeh mevarech, but ve'heyeh bracha. And therefore this kind of lingers with Rashi. What is the meaning of ve'heyeh bracha? And Rashi is not satisfied fully until he does something revolutionary and explains that the words Ve'heyeh Bracha mean exactly what they sound like they mean. You will be a Bracha. The Bracha of Magen Avraham. You will conclude the Bracha. As we've noted it a number of times, it's inaccurate to say that the Pshat translates literally and the Drash translates non-literally. That's not true. Sometimes the opposite is true. The Pshat translates simply. Sometimes the simple translation is not the literal translation. For example, the Pshat of Ve'heyeh Bracha doesn't mean you're a blessing. It means that you will bless others. That's a verb, it's not a noun. But what can you do? That's the Pshat. So in the interests of simplicity, we veered away from the literal translation. The Drash steps in where the Pshat fears to tread and says, what happens if you actually translate the word bracha literally? You never know what will happen. Well, here's what will happen. You will become a bracha called Magen Avraham. Now, the Drash has resources that allow it to say that, namely the entire Masorah. The Pshat only has a good reader, an alert reader. So the Pshat could never suggest something like that. The Pshat doesn't know from Shemoneh Yisrei, but the Drash does. And because it knows more, it's allowed to translate literally. It has more possible responses at its disposal. And therefore, once Rashi, and that's why, interesting to note, Rashi's entire second Perush is on the words Ve'heyeh Bracha, even though he goes through the entire Pasuk, not just Ve'heyeh Bracha, he goes through everything again. But it's all in the dibur of Ve'heyeh Bracha because it's spawned by the words Ve'heyeh Bracha. That's what launches Rashi into this second approach. Still, we've only understood to a degree what motivated Rashi, but we don't yet understand what Rashi is saying. We just understood why he had to say something. What does it mean? I mean, how can we understand that Ve'esecholo Gagadol means Elokei Avram? Elokei Avram is about Hashem. Ve'esecholo Gagadol is about Avram. Va'avarech Hashem says, I'll bless you. So we say that's why Hashem is, we say that Hashem is the God of Yitzchak. It doesn't seem to have traction. So what is the meaning of this interpretation? Moreover, we should know, those that have swept through Tanakh will tell us that it sounds like Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov are unique. You've got a special bracha, and that's why you'll find Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. It sounds like you won't find Elokei anyone else. That happens not to be true. We find in the beginning of Malachim Beis, Elisha says, Ayei Hashem Elokei Eliyahu. And we find in Sefer Shmuel that Nathan Hanavi says, Elokei David. So it sounds like, after all that seems exceptional about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, and there's psukim about it, and they're in a league of their own, and yet we seem to find this about other individuals, but there's no special pasuk. How did they merit? How did Eliyahu merit that Hashem says Elokei Eliyahu? Or it doesn't seem to be so exclusive anymore. The pasuk of Elokei David actually is dealt with by the Gemara, because Rashi's second perush, this drash perush of the brachos Elokei Avraham Yaakov, it's from the Gemara Psachim, Daf Kuf Yud Zayin Amud Beis. But an approach to this, the second explanation of Rashi that I'd like to take a look at, is from one of the earliest commentators on Rashi. It's a perush called the Sefer Zikaron. Sefer Zikaron was written by Rabbi Avraham Bukharat, and it came before the Mizrach, and he's, I believe, one of the first Perushim on Rashi's Perush. And the Sefer Zikaron explains. To understand the background, we need to appreciate that there's a difference when you talk about, let's say, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's a difference between saying something that's true and saying something that's a praise. Not everything that's true is a praise. And specifically with regards to our discussion. For if we would praise HaKadosh Baruch Hu as being the God of an entity, what type of entity would it be a praise for him to be referred to as? So here, the individual and the nation or world population are divided. If we say that Hashem is the God of the entire world, or he's the God of Israel, that's a title, so to speak. And that's a praise. From our feeble praising perspective, that's a praise. To say that he's the God of some individual, that's not a praise. It's true. It's not untrue. But that's what you're going to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as you're listing his praises, even a short list of his praises. You'll say, you're the God of so-and-so. It's lacking in that magnitude that would turn it into a praise. And that's why we tend not to say that Hashem is Elokei of an individual. We don't refer to him as such. We certainly don't address him as such. Because what is that? Is it true? It is true. But is it a praise? No. But then, this leads us to a deeper understanding of what we do mean when we say that Hashem is, when we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, address him as being Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov. It doesn't tell us anything we didn't know about Hashem. It actually tells us something we didn't know about Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. Namely, that even though they are individuals of such stature that they practically or virtually have the status of a nation. To the extent that it now becomes a praise for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to be referred to as the God of Avraham. Avraham is the equivalent of the Jewish nation. As surely as we would say Hashem is Elokei Yisrael, the God of the Jewish people, we can now say he's Elokei Avraham. And moreover, not only does Avraham have the status of the Jewish people, it could be that we're saying something else. It could be that Avraham is the Jewish people. It's a recognition of his status. And the reason why is because Avraham incorporates within himself the entire Jewish people in potential. He really is the Jewish people. The Jewish people begin as one person. That means the entire nation in potential is compacted into Avraham. He is a walking Jewish people. And then will be Yitzhak, and then will be Yaakov. Which I believe gives us a fascinating further insight into the concept that we speak about a lot, we meet it a great deal in Chumash Bereishis, namely, Ma'aseh Avos Siman Labonim, that what happens to the Avos happens to the children, to their descendants. And as we've mentioned on a number of occasions, it isn't just a helpful preview or an interesting alignment of events, that everything that happens to the descendants has happened to the Avos. It's more than that. As Ramban explains, it's based on the concept that in order for a prophecy or a miracle to happen in the world, it tends to be preceded by some form of trigger act, of catalyst act. We find many nevuos were accompanied by some type of physical act, what's called a poel dimyon, an act that represents this, and the Ramban explains that act was effected in order to harness the spiritual energy and bring it into the world and allow it ultimately to become the event as was prophesied, or the miracle as was prophesied. Says Ramban, and in a sense he is preceding the famous comment of Rabbi Yaakov Emden in his introduction to his commentary on his Siddur, where he says that the more he considers the experiences of the Jewish people throughout all of their history, the more he is convinced that the existence of the Jewish people is a miracle that dwarfs any miracle that you will find in the Chumash. Whatever it may be, Kriyas Yam Suf, doesn't matter. How can they still be? It's inexplicable. Chaye Roshi, says Rabbi Yaakov Emden. The more I think about it, the more I just can't get over it. And that's Rabbi Yaakov Emden in the 1700s. Quite a few things have happened from then till now. If we would reprint the Siddur, just thought his words would get bigger and bigger. That's the miracle of the Jewish people. Well, if it's the greatest miracle, so where is the poel dimyon? Where is the trigger? Where is the catalyst that allows the energy for the existence, survival, and thriving of the Jewish people? It's the pre-experiences in the lives of the Avos. That's the idea of Ma'aseh Avos Siman Labonim. It's not merely to give a preview into the experiences of the descendants. It actually allows and enables the descendants to have those experiences. This is the poel dimyon. So this is how the Ramban explains Ma'aseh Avos Siman Labonim. I believe, in terms of our discussion, whereby we say that Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, they all have not only the status of the Jewish people, but they are the Jewish people as they in one. So I think it's a different dynamic now, because in a sense, not only whatever happens to the Jewish people has already been experienced by the Avos, whatever happens to the descendants of the Jewish people has it already been experienced by the Jewish people in the form of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. They have experienced it because they were all there within Avram. He is the Jewish people, and so is Yitzchak, and so is Yaakov. But to come back to how it explains the words, Ve'esachol goy gadol, I will make you into a great nation, now reads Kipshuto. Not in the future. Now you're a great nation. And because now you're a great nation, so we can address HaKadosh Baruch Hu as Elokei Avram. Because Avram is a great nation. And then Va'avorechecha, Brocha is always Tosefes, always adding and extending, increasing, and therefore it extends from Avram to Yitzchak. Yitzchak is also a great nation. Va'gad l'shamecha, I will make your name great. That is furthermore, leading to Yaakov, and thus we understand that to say Elokei Avram, Elokei Yitzchak, Elokei Yaakov is indeed an understanding of these words, that Avram is a great nation, and then he's blessed, and then his name is made even greater. And this will resolve, says the Sefer Zikaron, the other occurrences that we find in the Tanakh of Elokei Eliyahu, or of Elokei David. That's not a problem. That doesn't compromise or contradict what we're saying. Because in context, they were said, as someone was talking, it's true, it will always be true. Hashem is Elokei Eliyahu. When Elisha talks about it, it's true. And to say that he's Elokei David is also true. We're not talking about whether it's appropriate to say it. In the world, we're saying it's, whether it's appropriate to say it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's only true for Avraham, Yitzhak, and Yaakov. So, as we have seen, there's a great deal to say about the second Perush of Rashi, much that needs to be resolved, and these are the words of the Sefer Zikaron. I'll just conclude, perhaps appropriately, on this Veheye Bracha, for we say that Elokei Avraham, Elokei Yitzhak, Elokei Yaakov, you might think that we conclude with all of them. But we don't, because the Pasuk says, Veheye Bracha, you're the Bracha. Thus we only say Magen Avraham. What is the what's the meaning of leaving behind our Yitzhak and Yaakov as we get to the conclusion? Says the Kedushas Levi, Rabbi Yitzhak Aberdichev, essentially, mentioning all the Avos originally and then mentioning only Avram is a statement about what all of the Avos represent. As we know, the Avos embody different Midos. Avram is the Mid of Chesed, and Yitzhak is the Mid of Din, and Yaakov is Emes. And there, as individuals, they embody those Midos, but these Midos pre-existed them. These are Midos with which HaKadosh Baruch Hu runs the world. And it's important to have a perspective, not only a perspective, but a unifying perspective, because otherwise it's very unhealthy, I think, to have a sense that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has these middos and they're in conflict with each other. Din and Chesed are opposites. I mean, it sounds like there's a war of middos going on. And then Emes somehow kind of comes in there as well. But we know that on behind all of this, we say, Olam Chesed Yibone. The creation of the world is ultimately an act of Chesed. Chesed isn't always achieved by the Midah of Chesed. The goals of Chesed are not always achieved by the medium of Chesed. Sometimes one needs to be cruel to be kind, and that's oversimplifying it, to use an understatement. But as surely as Lahavdil, in our experiences, if a person wants, but what you give him, he doesn't use for good causes, he only uses for destructive purposes, it's not kindness. One needs to withhold for the purposes of a greater kindness. And ultimately, that is the way one has to look at all of these middos. HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't have these warring or conflicting middos. They're all serving the same aim. Even when there's din in the world, sometimes it's hard for us to fathom how it can be the case, but even when there's din in the world, ultimately, it serves the purpose of Chesed. And that's why when we conclude the bracha, the chasima of the bracha is only Avram, says Kedushas Levi. Because the chasima of the bracha is literally, it's the bottom line of the bracha. The chasima is what it's all about. As we describe the different middos through Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, they're all there. But if you want to know what all about, they're all about Avram's middah. He's the only one that's in the signature of the bracha. It's a fascinating approach to that Gemara, which is quoted by Rashi in this opening pasuk. So, we've spoken quite a bit about Lech Lecha. Let's try and move on a little bit into the Parsha, a bit of Lech Lecha ourselves. And I'd like to devote a section, this final section of the Shir, to the episode with Hagar. Hagar and Sarai. There's quite a lot to say. It's in Perek Tet Zayin. So what happens? Sarai has no children. Just read the psukim. V'sarai, Perek Tet Zayin Pasuk Aleph. Sarai Eshes Avram Lo Yolda Lo. She had no children yet. V'lo Shivcha Mitzvus U'Shma Hagar. She has this maidservant, Hagar. V'atomer Sarai El Avram Hinei Not. Zerani Hashem Miledes. Hashem has prevented me from having children. Bono Shivcha Si. So, maybe have a relationship with the Hagar. Ulai Bonem Imena. Maybe I'll be built from her. V'yishma Avram Lekol Sarai. Avram listens. Okay. So Sarah, Vatikach Sarah Eishes Avram as Hagar HaMitzvah Shivchasa. So she takes Hagar and she presents him to Avram. But it doesn't work out well. Pasuk Dalet Vayavo El Hagar Vatahar. So he begins a relationship with Hagar. She conceives Vateraki Harasa Vatekal Gvetabeina. She begins to take Sarah lightly, as if to say, I'm the one. Sarah's not having any children. I am. She begins to take Sarah lightly. And Sarah responds or reacts harshly. Because at the end of Pasuk Vav, Vate'aneha Sarai, Sarah persecutes her. Vate'vrach b'paneha, she runs away. There are famous words of the Ramban with regards to the treatment of Hagar on the part of Sarai. And Ramban understands that Sarai should not have treated her that way. She should not have persecuted her. And moreover, Avram should not have stood aside. Ad kedei kasas Ramban, you've got to be the Ramban to say this. But we have troubles from the descendants of Hagar. And perhaps that is retribution for the way that she was originally treated by Avram and Sarai. That's quite a thing to say. The Abarbanel quotes Ramban, and Abarbanel disagrees. Abarbanel is of the understanding that Sarah was within her rights. She'd been slighted by Hagar, and she had to put her back in her place. And we should know, there is a further dynamic here. And that is, for Hagar to belittle Sarai is not just a personal insult against Sarai. People get insulted. It's more than that. She is undermining the entire life work of Sarai. Because really what she's saying is, and that's how Rashi and the Medrash talk about it, she's saying, listen, everybody thought Sarai was the Rebbetzin. Everybody thought that she was the big tzaddikas, but maybe people should be rethinking. Because if the symptom of Hashem's approval for one's behavior is giving them a child, so I've conceived quite quickly, Sarah has conceived at all, maybe there's more to Sarah than meets the eye. Maybe she's not as much as a tzaddikus as she makes out. That threatens the entire basis of Sarah's life and everything that she does. So Sarah responds. As we know, the famous mashal of the Medrash, Hagar conceived quickly. For Sarah, it took a long time. What does that mean? That means that Sarah was less of a tzaddikus, says the Medrash. Thorns and thistles grow, and wheat grows. And one of them grows by itself, and the other needs to be cultivated. In other words, if you want to know why Hagar conceded so quickly, what is she carrying? She's carrying the human equivalent of thorns and thistles. No, it practically grew by itself. Hagar is carrying, Sarah is carrying the wheat. She's carrying the real article. Can take a while. Needs to be cultivated. Of course, Hagar didn't learn the Medrash. She doesn't see things that way. And she felt that that meant that she was a better person than Sarah. Bichlal, we find that Sarah, when she deals harshly with Hagar, Sarai always is the one who initiates the harsher decisions. And this brings us in the household. That brings us back. Obviously, we're talking in very distant terms. But this brings us back to the midah of Avram. Avram is the midah of Chesed, and that's why he's always very reluctant to be harsh with people. Not with Hagar, and in next week's parsha, not with Yishmael. He doesn't want to send Yishmael away. Sarai is the one who says to send away. And in that instance, Sarai was right. And here, Avram listens to Sarai. And as Mefarshim point out, Avram, who's a chesed personality, needs someone like Sarah, who's more din. That's the balance of the household. If they're both chesed, it could be overbalanced. As surely as, in the next generation, Yitzchak, who's the midah of din, when Eliezer goes in 2 weeks' time to find a wife for him, he's just looking for one midah. Chesed. He wants unlimited chesed. That's what Yitzchak's wife is going to need between the two of them. They'll have a balanced household. The Chasam Sofer says that's the meaning of a person's wife being called Ezer Kenegdo. Ezer Kenegdo means sometimes for the wife to be an Ezer, she has to be Kenegdo. Kenegdo literally means opposing him. She has to supplement certain midas that he doesn't have in order to balance. Sometimes that's the greatest help. If they both have are in league with regards to everything, there may be a certain balancing that never happens. I'm always reminded of my father's, that's all told me once, that Rav Herzog, of course, the great Rav Herzog, the chief rabbi of Israel, a world-class gaon, pure intellect, but he had a heart of butter. And my father told me that when he would receive his salary, he would give it away on the way home. From his office to his house, he just couldn't bear to see all the people in need. He would literally come, it happened a couple of times, he came home with nothing. That's the intellect of Rav Herzog. It couldn't withstand the difficulties and sufferings of the poor of Jerusalem. So the Rebbetzin got in touch with the office and says, do not give him his salary. Pay it directly to me. Someone's got to feed our children. Ezer Kenegdo. And therefore, we find that Avram, he will not be the one that will deal harshly with those that are treated harshly. It's going to be Sarah. Okay. And Hagar runs away. Pasuk Zayin, Vayimtza'a Malach Hashem al Ein HaMayim Bamidbar. So a malach finds her. It's a very interesting expression. A malach finds her. What does that mean, he finds her? When you find someone, that means you either didn't know where they were, or it's a strange expression to use with regards to a malach. Presumably the malach wasn't there arbitrarily. He knew exactly where she was at all times. So how can he find her? By the well. So the Malbim says something fascinating. The reason why this meeting is called him finding her is because he's a malach. That means that their interaction will be essentially a form of nevuah. I mean, she will be conversing with a malach, and she can do that. I mean, she's seen how it's done. She lived in Avram's house. However, a prophetic communication takes place with the cognitive faculties of the Navi, of the perceiver. And as we know, because that's true, there can be no nevuah if a person is agitated or unsettled. We see that from Elisha. He was upset, it says in Malachim, basically, kechuli menagen. They had to play music for him. Vayak kenagen amenagen vati alav ruach Hashem. Which means that the malach has a message for Hagar, but he can't communicate it as long as she's lacking the faculties to receive it. As long as she's running away and she's in distress and she's lost and confused and upset and agitated, she doesn't have a mindset that could receive nevuah. The first time she takes a rest is in this Pasuk Zion, Al Ein HaMayim. She finds a stream. She's been running so long, sits down, has a drink, gets herself together a little bit. Oh, now the malach found her. Meaning, she's finally able to connect with her. She's become settled to a degree that a malach can talk to her. So what does he say? Bayomar, Hagar Shifcha Sarai, Eimi Zebas, Vana Telechi. Where are you coming from? Where are you going? Batomer Mipnei Sarai Givirti Varachas. I'm running away from Sarah. So it's a very interesting, it's almost like a benign first pasuk before he gets down to Tachlis and the next pasuk where he tells her to go back. But what's the meaning of this opening? He says to her, where are you coming from? Where are you going? He knows. Of course he knows. Is it one of those occasions that we do find in the Chumash where he just likane sima bedvarim, just to... He doesn't want to start by giving her the instructions, but rather the opening is just to establish communication, even though she isn't telling him anything that he doesn't know. But it's interesting that he says, Hagar Shifcha Sarai. For someone who ostensibly doesn't know anything, he seems already to know a lot, even as he asks this question. In other words, he's saying, okay, Hagar, you're the Shifcha of Sarah. That's a lot to know from someone that she's never met before. So if he knows so much, he must know where she's coming from. Where does he think she's coming from if he already knows that she's Shifcha Sarah? She's coming from Sarah. That's an interesting chat question. As an opener, it would be if he could say, can I help you? Are you lost? Where are you from? That's one thing. But he's given her an entire CV. And then he says, where are you coming from? So even as an opener, it's, what does he? And the Sforno says something fascinating. Where are you coming? Where are you going? What is this? It's just, in a sense, saying hello. Since it's foreign, he's not saying hello. This is the first message. Kolomar, habiti uri'i. Hagar, shivchav sara. Think about what you're doing. Me'eze makam nasat. Think about where you just came from. Where have you come from? Where are you leaving? You're leaving the house of Avram and Sarah. You're heading out of Israel. You're heading to a bad place. So it's a Musar message. He's not just asking information. He's not asking her. He's saying to her, Hagar, you're the Shifcha of Sarah. Where are you going? Where are you coming from? Think about where you're coming from. Think of where you're going. How can you do this? It's not right. Now, it's interesting that if that's the question, then what does she mean by her answer? She says, I'm running away from Sarah. That's neither here nor there. But rather, says the Sforno, what she means, almost like to excuse herself, is that it's not as planned as that. My program is to leave Avram and go to a place of Rishayim. I'm not going anywhere. I haven't even thought where I'm going. I'm just running away. She's defending herself a little bit. He says, you're going from Tzadikim to Rishon. I'm not going. I have no vector. I just know where I want not to be. But I haven't thought of where I am. I haven't planned to go anywhere specific. I'm nowhere. So he says to her to go back. And he tells her that she will have a child. And what does he say? Pasuk Yud Beis. You will have a child, you'll call him Yishmael. V'hu yeh pera adam, yada v'kol v'yad kol bo. He'll be involved with everyone, them with him. Yeah. Now, there's many, many pirushim. Some words in the pasuk probably don't look like they need translating. Pera adam is multilingual. It doesn't need to be translated. Yada bakol v'yad kol bo. It's very interesting to understand what's the flow here in terms of his message. He sounds like he's comforting Hagar because in Pasuk Tes he says, go back. Shuvi al gritech v'yisani tachas yateha. Even if she's making life difficult, go back. It's worth it. V'yom ala malach Hashem harbar be'esarech v'lei sefer merev. If you have many children, he's encouraging her. He's blessing her. Pasuk Yud Aleph, Vayomer la Malach Hashem, Hinoch Harav, you'll have a ben. You'll conceive, you'll have a son. V'kara Shemo Yishmael, Ki Shema Hashem El Anich, Hashem has heard you. It will all be okay. And then, V'hu Yeh Pere Adam. That kills the mood. I mean, I don't think we have a makings of a bar mitzvah speech in the Pasuk Yud Beis. Decide. You want to encourage her? Because really what he's saying is, you'll have many descendants, Hashem will be okay, don't worry, you have a child, he'll be disaster, it will be absolutely awful. So are you making her feel better or not? What's the meaning of, what's the flow of the psukim? And the Be'er Yosef explains that he's not looking to make her feel bad, per se, but he's looking to correct one thing. You, Hagar, need to realign your perspective as you go back to Sarah. You took her lightly. You were mezalzel with Sarah because you conceived and she didn't. So you need to know a thing or two about the child that you will have, so that when you go back, you won't be boasting. That was a mistake to treat Sarah in that way. So it's a tempering the message. So before Hagar goes back, Vatikra Shem Hashem Hadover Eleha Atakel Roi. So she calls the Malach. She gives him a name. Atakel Roi, you are the force that I saw. Ki Amra Hagam Halon Roisi Acharei Roi. Very difficult words to really pin down. Hagam Halon Roisi Acharei Roi. Even here I saw after I saw. That's Hagar's contribution. Al Kain Karala Be'er Be'er Lachai Roi. And therefore the well, which we'll meet again actually in Parshas Chayesara, was called Be'er Lachai Ru'i. the well of the living vision. Hinei ben kadesh u ben bared. It's between two places, kadesh and bared. Very interesting psukim. Firstly, what does she mean? Ra'isi acharei ra'i. I saw after I saw. And why does the pasuk need to tell us where the well is? It's unlikely that we'll ever come across it. It's between kadesh and bared. So the sefer Yalkut Haurim says something which is just fascinating. See how the areas of Torah are unified. As we mentioned, Hagar here has a prophetic experience, and she's talking to Malach. We should know, the Gemara says in Maseches Moed Katan, Daf Kafhei, the principle is, the rule is, there is no Nevuah in Chutz La'aretz. And she's heading towards Chutz La'aretz. It seems that she's already in Chutz La'aretz. So how can she meet a Malach? You know, the Gemara there says that as much as we say that in principle there's no Nevuah in Chutz La'aretz, but if a Navi has already had Nevuah, he's already established his Nevuah experience in Eretz Yisrael, he can continue to have Nevuah even in Chutz La'aretz. It darshens the pasuk at the beginning of Yechezkel, because Yechezkel, the Ma'aseh Merkava, at the Mar of Nevuah of Yechezkel, was in Bavel, right, Al Nahar Paras. The pasuk says, Hayo, Haya, Devar Hashem al Yechezkel ben Buzi. Hayo, Haya, it was. So the Gemara says, it only was because it was. Meaning, he was only able to have this Nevuah in Bavel because he had already received Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael. Okay. The borders of Eretz Yisrael, interestingly, are discussed in the Mishnah, in the beginning of Maseches Gittin, because there are halachas about a get from Chutz La'aretz. There are certain stipulations and certain requirements that it has, what's called b'fanei nechtam, that's a very long and sugya. And the Mishnah there says, even if a person brings a get from rekem and cheger, afilu min ha-rekem u'min ha-cheger, that's already considered Chutz La'aretz. Where is rekem and where is cheger? Interestingly, if you have a look in Unculus, which gives us the location of this well, in the end of Pasuk Yudalad, she called the well Be'er Lachai Ro'i, Hinei ben Kadesh u'ben Barad. You know where this well is? It's between two places, Kadesh and Barad. What do we know about those places? Unculus translates, Ha ben Rekam u'ben Chagra. Kadesh and Barad are Rekam and Cheger. They're the two places that the Mishnah is talking about. They are considered to be in Chutz La'aretz. So, that being the case, Hagar should never have had Nevuah, because it's in Chutz La'aretz. But she did. Why? Because she's already had Nevuah in Eretz Yisrael. And that's the flow of the Psukim. That's why she says, Hagam Halom, even here. What's so special about here? Nothing. It's Chutz La'aretz. It's a non-special place. But even here, Ra'isi. Why? Acharei Ra'i, because I've already seen earlier. She's like Yechezkel. She's seen in Eretz Yisrael, so she can see in Chutz La'aretz. And to understand exactly the implication of that, Pasuk concludes by saying, Hinei ben Kodesh uvin Bored. Kodesh and Bored is Rekem and Cheger. Those are places in Chutz La'aretz. So fascinating to see how the halachas and the mishnayas and how the way Nevuah works all comes to be miyashid the diyukim of the psukim. We'll conclude with a comment on the word Pere Adam, which is, the Sforno explains that the reason why he's a Pere Adam is because he has two parts to him. Again, and this is not nice for Hagar to hear. Pere means he's wild, and Adam means he's a mensch. And that's a contradiction in terms, because he has two conflicting sources when you think about it. His mother is Hagar, who does not come from such great yichus, and his father is Avram. And therefore, says the Sforno, the Malach is saying, he will have conflicting aspects to his personality, to his makeup. He'll be part Pere, because of his Egyptian background. He'll be part Adam because of his Avram background. But, says the Sforno, he will be Adam lost. And this, says Sforno, is the remez in the Pasuk to what Chazal told us, that in the end, Yishmael did tshuva. In other words, grammatically, Pere Adam doesn't seem to be the most correct way to phrase it. Because Adam is the noun and Pere is the adjective, it should be Adam Pere, like Adam Godel, Adam Katan, Adam Pere, Adam Prai. So Pere Adam is backwards. Why is it backwards? Because it's a chronological projection of he will first be Pere and then Adam. Because he'll cause trouble in the beginning, and the end of being Adam, he'll get himself together and do tshuva. That's an interesting note to conclude on. We see many of his grandchildren yet in the Pere stage, and we hope that they will realize their full identity, and the Adam will take over in Meher Yamim.